Our artist tonight started playing piano when he was 5 years old. He helped form one of the truly legendary groups in the 60s and 70s, the Crusaders. He's performed on stage with Eric Clapton, B.B. King, Joe Cocker, and even the Supremes. We are very pleased and honored to have this gentleman with us this evening. Please give a very warm and enthusiastic welcome to Joe Sample.
Thank you. I don't remember what George Caldwell, the conversations had gone on in years, since 1964 at the Baker's Keyboard Lounge in Detroit about doing an album with me, George Benson, Joe Sample, George Benson. I saw him in 74, I didn't see him in 84. I saw him again in 94. Finally, in 99, we decided let's go and do this project, even though he had done a one-on-one recording with Earl Klute. And I reminded him how he and Warner Brothers just snubbed me. So when I finally got to New York in 99, some recording studio on 10th and 11th Avenue, I realized that this was not a collaboration. I was indeed a side man on George Benson's next recording. I think he titled it something like Gorgeous George. We love George, but he is sneaky man. George is sneaky, okay? And I tell the story about him all the time. Don't worry about it. He knows. In fact, we just worked with George in Detroit at the Masonic. But later Hathaway, George Benson, it was a killer show. And I finally jammed with George on his finale, and he pulled out all stops. And then he turned to me and said, "You got it, Joe." And man, I had some artillery waiting on that song. He had to grin and start laughing. He thought he was going to blow me off the stage, but he didn't. Actually, we loved each other tremendously. On drums from New Orleans, Johnny Vodakovich. On acoustic bass from Los Angeles, my son, Nick Sample. This next composition we would like to play for you is entitled The Freedom Sound. The year was 1961. I was 22 years old. The band and I left Houston, Texas with DJ June 6, 1958. We came out to Southern California looking for a recording contract that was not available. I refused to go back to Texas. I vowed I would never ever set foot below the Mason and Dixon line ever in my life. But I did move back to Houston in 99, okay? That was a lie. So, we were known as the Hollywood Nighthawks. We were one of the hottest dance bands in Southern California from 58 all the way up through 61. And I was a side man also. We did all kind of work. I could muster up $60 a week. That was a lot of money in 1959. And I took care of my mother and my father. I told my parents, "I'm leaving home. Goodbye." I was 19, 3 years of Texas Southern University. I finished all of my music courses. I'm out of here. They all followed me out to California. I never left home. Then I realized my mother uprooted the family because she knew that I needed 5-6 hours a day sitting on this piano getting my shit together. When I was 40 years old, I realized what my mother had done. So anyway, the Freedom Sound. we had an audition recording at Pacific Jazz Records. Richard Bach was the president. It was on West 3rd Street. That property is now a part of Cedar Sinai Hospital. We went in there. In those days, what you did, we were like fighters. You rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed, and you practiced and you practiced and you practiced. You were going to a recording studio, you only had one shot to get it done. We were not making records. You documented performances. So you were going into a recording studio to render a performance. Union rules are a recording session is 3 hours. You go in on Monday, 3 hours, you record side A. Two takes a song, that was it. Sinatra only did one take. You took Tuesday off, you went back on Wednesday and you recorded side B. Again, two takes a song. Then Monday, after the third composition was recorded, Dick Bach came in and said to us, "Relax, guys, you are now recording artists." We still didn't have a name for the band yet. It was later on in that week that someone said, "You guys have always been crusading for jazz." And we said, "Ah, the Jazz Crusaders." That's how it happened. We would like to bring you now the very first composition that I wrote that was ever recorded. It was the title track of the Jazz Crusaders' first recording, The Freedom Sound. It was in the height of the civil rights struggle.
Yes.
I knew that what I had to do in life was to stay at home and practice the piano. And I admired and loved all of those who made decisions of going to Selma and march. But I knew I wasn't going into Selma and march and get my fingers broken. I was going to stay in L.A. and practice the piano because I could do a lot of good in the long run. So I wrote a composition for them to march to. It is titled The Freedom Sound. It is the title track of that very first Jazz Crusaders recording. This record ended up on pop radio, and it ended up at every jukebox and every black club across the United States. It is titled The Freedom Sound.
Thank you.
title track
of the Spellbound recording. The year was the end of the nightmare of the 1980s. 1980, the world of music turned upside down. I remember seeing the very first music video that I'd ever seen. And word all throughout television, record companies, everywhere. I was like, this is a new beginning. And I was like, no, man, we've all been sentenced to death. Had nothing to do with listening to shit no more. Here's eyeball the video. Have you ever asked a youngster, you ever gone up to them youngsters? I used to do it all throughout the night. Hey, man, your car is really rattling. Got all that boom, boom, and rah. Did you hear that? Just tear your metal up on your car? Tell me something. Why do you like, do you really like that thing you're listening to? What is that anyway? I don't know. But what, do you really like it? And you know what they all say? Well, I don't know. I haven't seen the video yet. It's over, man. It's gone. It had nothing to do with the wonderful God. And you know what? It's our nature. It's a right to be a human being, to be able to feel, to hear, and sense. That's a whole other area. I mean, you can look at porno movies and get turned on. Music is that you hear it and you feel it. And it used to send chills through my body when I was a youngster. They have to see it before they know if they like it. So anyway, the 80s were a total nightmare. I had three choices in the 1980s. In the 1980s, I was with a wonderful record label, ABC Records. The Carmel recording came out in 79, Streetlight came out in 1980. And all of a sudden, I realized ABC Records was gone, and I was now owned by MCA Records. One day, I was taken out in 81 to the Black Tower at Universal Film Studios, and the record companies out there. I went down, for the first time in my life, I met these people that they stick their hand out at you. My name is up at 10%. What the hell are these people, man? Then I realized where they come. I had no idea who they were. Then I realized they came from the Harvard Business School. These were business school majors. And then I was ushered from the sixth floor down to the fifth floor, and I met nothing but black guys on that label. And the black guy didn't tell me, man, this is one guy, I can never remember this guy's name. They told me this guy was the guy in head of all urban music, meaning black music. Hardcore divisions in 1980 came down. Boom. This is pop, this is rock, this is white. Boom. This is black. It's rhythm and blues and rap. And divisions came down. And I finally saw black guys at a record company telling all the white guys, you do not promote the records of any black people anymore. This is true. It was a nightmare. And then they said, I want you to meet this guy. I looked at this guy and said, this stupid dapper da dapper da dapper is in charge of my life? You got to be jiving me, man. This is the dumbest son of a bitch ever. That's how it was. So by 1982, I knew I was in a nightmare. I lost my confidence at 83. It was hell. I had three choices. It was like, go to lawyers, try to battle my way out of it. I knew that was senseless. Go get my 357 and blow everybody away. And I said, no, I'm going to settle for the third choice. And that's what I did. And I came out wounded, 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 but I still had a fighting spirit. The third choice was kiss ass until it was all over. Meaning the contracts were done. So 1987, 1988, all the contracts. I signed to Warner Brothers in 88, 89. I remember going back to New York City. Once again, the legendary producer told me the Puma came into my life. I wrote this record. And I knew it had to become a monumental statement in my life. And it was the first recording that I did for the Warner Brothers Records. We recorded Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, then Friday. I was supposed to do a Ellison song solo piano. I got to the studio, and I remember sitting on the couch, and I realized I don't have the energy. And I laid back, and I felt this negative energy was pouring out of my body, because I knew I had put aside the horror of the 1980s. That was the Spellbound recording.
Yeah.
And you just listen to it. That's what that album was all about. Tell everybody to go to hell. And then Warner Brothers eventually went down the tubes. And anyway, I'm still having fun. The youngsters ask me, what are you doing? I say, man, just play. Just go find one other guy, two other guys, like, and get in your mama's living room, get in a garage, and just play. And the hell with the record companies. And just go in some little bar, and you'll find out there's six people like you. That's what my son is doing now. You know, you just create your own fan base, and that's how it all started in the first damn place. Yeah. Good night. I'm gonna go back. Some of the inspiration in the 1940s that inspired me to become a musician, and of course it was Nat King Cole, one of the greatest legends of American piano ever. He taught all the jazz pianists how to play. Capitol Records in 1943 discovered that Nat Cole could sing, and his piano career came to an abrupt halt. I promise you, I will never sing for record companies. I love the piano too much. This song, which it is a classic blues, as opposed to the rural blues. The rural blues is moaning. You moan your troubles away. This one has a melody that you will recognize when I play it on the piano. It is titled, Gee, Baby, Ain't I Good to You.
Woo!
Shopping, and I heard this music, and I heard somebody was rapping, and I listened to the music, and I heard the rapper, and I heard the music. Wait a minute, that's my damn melody. And I said, oh, that's that guy named Tupac. That's right. That's, oh, they told me that dude had sampled a composition of mine. And someone said, yeah, Joe, you know, that's the number two record in the United States right now. No shit! So anyway, later on that evening, at the Blue Note, it was the number one hit in Japan, and Tupac's recording was titled Dear Mama. What he sampled was a composition of mine from the Rainbow Seeker record titled In All My Wildest Dreams. And I listened to it, and I really loved it. He was apologizing to his mother for being a jackass. And I thought it was very, very, very wonderful. Right now, I would like to play for you the two bars. I want you to listen to countless notes where it's at. Maybe it's 16, 18 notes that I wrote. Man, do you know how much money that generated? And I got paid. The United States Congress has just created the... Hey, you can't just take somebody's music and don't pay them. I was one of the first guys to get paid. I was gonna come looking for that sucker. Give me my money, Tupac. But anyway, I got paid. But just, I don't know, it generated millions. I mean, I didn't get millions. So, I'm going to play for you those notes that he sampled, and right after that, we'll put in play In All My Wildest Dreams from the Rainbow Seeker. And he repeated that over and over and over and over. And the cash register kept ting-a-ling, 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 and ting-a-ling. Now we're going to play for you In All My Wildest Dreams in its entirety.
Thank you.
So now I'm waiting like to play for you that one of those compositions that I wrote for myself and gorgeous George Vincent. This one is titled "101", and I know that George and Earl Clue did a recording titled "101". I told George that I've written another composition titled "101". George was not feeling too good. He actually had surgery, but he decided to go on with the recording session anyway, and that's when I found out I was a side man. And then I found out that he wanted me to play all the damn melodies. Well, now, George, I'm a side man, and I got to play all the melodies. We love George, but he's cute. So anyway, I'm going to play this melody. Now, in my right hand, you're going to hear me playing this melody. Now, George was supposed to play in unison with me the same exact melody. Whatever the hell it is. So on. So, but he didn't do it. I played it. George was my side man. So now I want you to listen to my right hand, and I want you to imagine hearing George Benson playing that melody at the same time, and it would be a wonderful thing if you could actually hear George playing it. I won't be listening for George at all. But you have fun. You've got to imagine what George Benson would sound like playing the same melody with me. This composition is titled "101". Thank you. Thank you. One-on-one? So right now, it was in maybe 54. I bought this album. I was had to take a route and all that. I used to go out and buy recordings. I bought a recording of a pianist known as Errol Garner. Man, you guys turned on that air conditioner. Y'all didn't do that to me. Oh, man. Don't y'all do that to me no more. I feel some cold shit blowing on me now. Y'all turn that damn thing off. Give me pneumonia up here. I am sweating. I'm hot as hell. Don't blow no cold air on me now. Y'all piss me off. Man, you don't blow cold air on no damn bandstand. Don't you want your musicians to be hot? Yeah. Just to turn that shit off. So, you know, I'm getting chill. I swear, man, it's going down to my bones already. Yeah. Errol Garner. I saw him play once live in the 1960s. There was a club in Los Angeles called the Flying Fox over in the Crenshaw area, in the big shopping center at Crenshaw and Santa Barbara. Earl Bostic, the master of the jukebox, was the owner of this club. And Errol Garner came in there one night. I was in there working with Ernie Andrews with the trio, and Errol Garner came in, and I was like, wow, man, this guy is unbelievable. I listened to Errol Garner to today, and his left hand was always doing something like, and he would do all the stride. But the most amazing thing, and what jazz is to me, the most fascinating thing about jazz is not the European science. All those things are wonderful, I love them, but to me, jazz is where you place your notes in between a group of beats. Errol Garner was amazing. I describe he and Jimmy Smith as like, they play between the cracks of the meter. It is so hard to get in there and just play the right note at the right time. That's the most fascinating thing in jazz. That is the thing that will make you feel chills going down your back, like instrumental. So anyway, Errol Garner wrote the great, great ballad, Misty. And man, I may need my jacket, Paul. I'm really getting cold. It is titled Misty, and I learned if you want to win the high school talent contest, play Misty. Now, didn't Clint Eastwood, Clint Eastwood do that movie? Play Misty for me. Who sang it? Was it Roberta Flack who sang Misty? Right. Well, if you want to win the high school talent contest, play Misty. You can get all the women real excited. They just love it. And, what else was I going to say? Johnny Mathis did it, and someone else recorded it, and it did become the legendary piece of music. We would like now to play for you. Oh, I was going to say, everybody, Elvin, you know, said, man, write another song like that. You can't do that. It's impossible. You can never write another song like that. I've been trying for 50 damn years to write another song. Forget about it. It ain't going to work. I've been trying for 50 years to write another Streetlight. It don't happen like that. It's like you having one son named Johnny. You ain't going to produce two exactly like that. They're going to all be different. So, Misty, we would like to play for you now. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.